Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so thrilled to have in the studio with me today Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, and we are going to answer some of the questions that I've been sent in from you listeners who are in the process of writing books, or you finished your book and you're worried. So I hope that Bill will be able to answer some of your worries today. We just finished BoucherCon here, the big mystery writer of America, mystery writer of the world convention. And we had authors from all over the world. And I will say that I did get a chance to talk to some of them. And I asked, actually mostly over drinks, if they ever had any legal problems, because I do find that they are hesitant sometimes to answer those questions on air, because I think they don't want to start crying. But I have had, as you know, some authors who have talked about their legal problems, including Clive Cussler, who had a $10 million legal problem. So, Bill, thank you so much for being in the studio with me today, and let's talk about intellectual property.
All right, let's go.
Oh, boy. You know, it's so funny. We've talked before about parody, and now they're just starting this Harry Potter television station. They're going to have, I think it's going to be like 24-hour Harry Potter. It's going to be amazing. And I have a number of authors who have written books or are in the process of writing books or want to write books using Harry Potter as a theme. One is doing a Harry Potter trivia book. One is doing a Hogwarts like homeschool curriculum type book. They're all going to be using in some way, shape, or form the name Harry Potter or Hogwarts or some other character. What is their legal rights and responsibilities?
And right, so where's the line drawn between what you can do permissibly, right, through commenting or talking about the piece versus copying them or using what they have to make money? And so I think the plaintiff, obviously Harry Potter, is going to say, it's all mine. You can't use any of it in any way. And the defendants are going to say, no, we have some limited right to use it. And they'll probably have to fight it out to see where the line is between the two.
So if somebody has, for example, and this is a local author and who is, an absolutely obsessed with Harry Potter since she started reading Harry Potter, you could actually ask her a question and she'd know the page where, you know, something happened. And she's writing a Harry Potter trivia book. Now, can she call it, this is a Harry Potter trivia book?
Right, and that could be a problem for her because Harry Potter is a registered trademark. It's protected by the writer and the owner of all the characters. And so she will have to come underneath the exception of fair use in order to be able to publish that book.
And obviously she couldn't not use a photograph of Harry Potter. She could not use on the cover anything that looked like the artwork from a film.
Those are copyrighted.
Right? Those are all copyrighted.
All the images are copyrighted.
Every image is copyrighted. So she would have, I know she's having fun doing it. And I told her that, you know, when she came to me and like a year ago, she said, you know, I'm working on this and I'm going to get. And I said to her, you know, I hope you're having fun because I don't know at that point. But and since that I spoke to her, I mean, she has like thousands and thousands of Harry Potter questions and trivia information. And I could not see how she could just put that on the title of a book.
Correct. And so there's a couple of considerations, whether she falls under the exception of fair use, right? If it was newsworthy or something like that, or if it's for educational purposes.
Right? Like the Hogwarts school curriculum.
Right. So there's a possible exception for educational purposes. It's limited. Okay. But you have to start at the standpoint that you can't do it. That's your start. That's your default setting. You can't do it, all right? And then you have to find a reason that you can do it if it falls into an exception, because they, through their copyrights and trademarks, they own all the images, they own the names of the characters, they own the facts. Everything about the book is owned by the Harry Potter, you know, machine. Right,
and it's a big, machine.
I mean, and they're not going to take lightly to it, because
they must have like a half dozen lawyers just constantly.
Their argument will be, well, to the extent that there's going to be a trivia book, we're going to write it, not you.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's ours, and so now you're being involved in a commercial project here. You want to take the work that's ours. You want to put it in a different light or a different way, and then you want to sell it and make money off it. But that's our stuff, and it's our money to make, not yours. So I can see it being a problem.
I saw it as a problem right then, and I warned her like a year ago, and I didn't know she was going to just continue, you know. And I just don't see how she can do it, because if you're going to just put Harry Potter, first of all, they're going to jump on you. And part of Harry Potter is are the images, and you can't do that in a math book. A Hogwarts, if you have a library that looks like Hogwarts, you know, as an image,
it's an
even
infringement.
If you draw it yourself, it's not going to. Still.
Or you can't draw it yourself.
Yeah.
You can't take a copyrighted image and draw it yourself, which is what we call a derivative work. Okay. The original copyright owner owns the derivative works. Okay. So if somebody comes along and uses a pencil and tries to draw it themselves, they can't use that in a commercial setting. You can't do it. If you want to, you know, put it in your private collection at your home, I don't think anybody's going to mind. But you can't commercialize it.
So I'm telling her, and I'm just, as Bill just said here, think about, before you put a lot of time and energy into something, that you will not be able to publish.
Well, not only that, but you could create financial liability for yourself.
Yeah.
Two things to consider is, A, are we allowed to do it from a legal standpoint? And then, B, what is the possible financial downside? Because these very large organizations have a lot of money, and they're very sophisticated in protecting what is theirs. And they don't want anybody touching it in any way. Now, sometimes they cross the line, right? They try to keep you away from their work. Sometimes they lose, okay? Because if you can argue it's a parody, or if you can argue that it's a fair use through education or newsworthy or something like that. But these are extremely limited exceptions. So if you had to bet, usually it's the plaintiff, the copyright owner, that's going to prevail in any of these cases.
One of the cases that I looked up and just to mention to you was this Yiddish with Dick and Jane.
Yes.
And that's a parody.
Yes.
And did they lose in that case?
I don't know what the outcome was. I think that the plaintiff just did not proceed.
It gave it up. Because,
yeah, just kind of gave it up.
Because Dick and Jane is a famous book.
It is.
I hated those books.
And so parody is one of the most difficult areas of copyright law. It's difficult for the judges to really know when to rule that it's a parody.
Yeah.
Because for some people, it may just be a copy set in a different light. And for other people, it is. It's a comment, right? It's a form of comment parody. It's probably the toughest question in copyright law. What is and what is not?
Okay. Well, people, you should really think hard about spending you might have a lot of fun doing it, and I'm sure if it's just for fun for yourself, but if you're looking at, you know, don't get yourself in trouble. Now, if somebody had, like, something that they thought might be valuable, would they be safe to contact directly, like, the Harry Potter organization, company, world-dominating people? Should they write a letter and say, you know, I have this project, I've worked on it, and could we, not license, or could you, like, buy it from me?
So usually their default setting is no.
Yeah.
All right. But a lot of the large organizations do have programs where they bring creative people in through licensing, and so that might be available. So, whether it's available through the Harry Potter organization, I don't know. But for instance, with collegiate sport trademarks and stuff like that, you can get licenses to do things. That's really where they make their money.
Yeah. Well, I would think a Hogwarts math book would be lots of fun for kids.
It might be.
And they might.
Right.
I mean, and if this person is actually, he is an educator, and he's.
So there might be a collaboration there.
Then he might have a.
Now the risk is that if you call them up and say, this is what I want to do,
and then they
just say no.
And then they do it.
And they do it anyway. Yeah. So you can't stop them because it's theirs.
And you can't sue them.
And then they, no. And then you do it anyway after they told you no. Now you have a real problem because in intellectual property law, we have a theory called willfulness, which is knowing wrongness, okay? There's one thing to, sometimes people innocently infringe. It happens. They don't know and they just accidentally do it, all right? That's one thing. You still have to pay damages. But if you do something after somebody told you not to, right? When your mom said, don't take any more of the cookies, when you get punished after you were told not to, you're really getting in trouble, okay? And the law can award very high damages and attorney's fees for people who willfully infringe. So that's the problem with contacting them. And if they say no and you do it anyway, you've got this willfulness problem, which can make your case financially a real whopper.
Yeah. Well, talking about willful, I met at BoucherCon, which is, as I said, the largest convention for mystery writers. They came from all over the world. We had people from really every country. It was absolutely fantastic. There were over 1,500 people here at the Vinoy Hotel. It was a wonderful event. About 1,000 readers, over 300 writers, and then people from the industry. So I got a chance to talk to people from all over, and one of the people I did talk to was from Australia. And she had this problem of discovering that her book, she published in Australia. She had published a number of books over the years, you know, like 17 years she had been writing. And she was just published in Australia. She wasn't, she had with a small publishing house there, and she was doing well. And then she discovered that somebody had actually taken her drawings. Those were her drawings. She drew them herself and translated them into other languages. And they were actually, I understand, doing quite well in weird countries that she never even thought about, like, you know, Romania and Baluchistan. I don't know, all over the place. But they were her... They were her actual pictures. She's like, what? Those are my drawings. And it was only by accident that she discovered, because they weren't being sold like on Amazon. They were being sold in bookstores in these countries with her pictures and foreign words. And it just so happened that somebody from Australia, somebody that knew her books, was traveling. And they saw her book in a local bookstore. They said, oh, Maggie, I didn't know you were... They got back to Australia and said, Maggie, I didn't know you were translated into, you know, whatever language. I think it was that one was like Czech or something. And she said, I'm not translated into any language. And the person says, oh, but I did, yes, you are. And then the person says, oh, I didn't think of buying it. I should have bought it, but I thought you...
Yes.
So then she had to find somebody who could actually go to that place and buy a book for her so that she could see if it was true. And it was true. I mean, what happens to that? What can she do?
Well, anything? First of all, copyrights, when they're protected in any of the countries that are a member of the Berne Convention, have copyright protection all over the world.
So right? Australia would probably be.
Correct. Right. So if this author registered their copyright in Australia, it would be automatically protected in all of the countries that are a member of the treaty, which is anywhere you really would want to sell something. And so she would be entitled to, through those local courts, stop the infringement of her copyright through the sale of these books in the local courts. The problem is you have to go country by country by country.
Oh.
All right. So there's no... let's say, international court, so to speak, where you can go in and get everybody to stop in all these different countries. So it's an enormous task financially and physically to go to all these countries and then try to figure out who's doing it. Where are they making these books? So it's almost impossible to stop.
Yeah.
It's virtually impossible to stop.
I thought, whoa, that's pretty bad. I think she did discover... Well, they were printed in a country that, prints a lot of stuff. And I guess, it's hard to, you can't go to that. And I think they were printing it for all these different languages. They actually have, They've taken it and then they're just putting in the
translating it,
yeah,
and then selling it in those countries. And it'd be very difficult to stop for two reasons. Number one, to find out where they're doing it and how they're doing it. They could be very secretive about it. All right. And the second thing is that if you sue them in the country where they reside, let's say they're in China.
Let's say they are in China.
The Chinese courts are not very favorable to U.S. or Australian plaintiffs suing the Chinese folks for intellectual property. This is one of the big disputes that we have with China right now, our federal government has with China, that for a long time they have been violating United States intellectual property rights. And it's been very difficult to stop. You just have to look at some of the major players selling products in the world to see how difficult it is. For instance, Callaway, the golf clubs, any of the great clothing lines, right? Rolex watches. How is it that these really big companies with a lot of lawyers and a lot of sales can't put a stop to it? And the reason's twofold. It's hard to find who they are and where they are, and when you find them, the local courts are not very friendly to stopping them.
So, Maggie, in Australia, I think you don't have any chance, but it might be fun to ask all Australians who are traveling to strange countries to get some copies of your book. At least you'll have them to show to people. Which brings us then to the other thing that I talked to several people about is this, where people are actually stealing. And this happens a lot in romance writers, I've discovered, that there are some very unromantic people out there who are taking romance books. And we had spoken before about a girl in California, a librarian, and I thought that was a terrible thing. She was taking romance books and then turning them into little naughty romance books. And it, just changing the characters' names and adding at the end, every once in a while, a naughty scene. And of course, the romance author who does not read naughty books did not know about this happening for a while until somebody who...
That's a copyright infringement.
Obviously, somebody was reading naughty books and also reads romance books and told her, well, you know, I didn't know you wrote... Yes. So... And in that case, that woman was found guilty of copyright infringement. Very guilty, because she had done it not just to that author, but to a number. She just took the books actually and just scanned them, you know, in.
Right. And that was something, like we said, might be considered a willful infringement.
Oh, that's willful.
She knew it was wrong, and you're not supposed to do it.
Especially
did it anyway.
If you're a librarian, for goodness sake.
You should know better, right? Yeah. You should know.
Yeah.
That's the test for the willfulness. And you can get in a lot of trouble for that financially. And there is some criminal statutes also.
Yes, I think it was criminal. I think actually perhaps it went to the criminal, because that was really...
Government rarely gets involved in issues like that criminally, because they have so many other things to worry about. But civilly, still.
That was a terrible
thing
to do.
You can't do it.
Yeah, and I hope that she's no longer...
It goes beyond just the infringement, because you can damage the reputation of the original author.
Sure.
Because those who read the original books and like them in a certain style, right, now come across the style which is a little bit more racier, right?
Yeah.
And then now they could stop buying the original author's books because they don't approve of what they see.
Exactly.
There.
I think so that's exactly what happened.
Backflow of reputation damages, and you can really hurt somebody.
Yeah. Now, which brings us to this question that one of the authors mentioned to me. What is Amazon's responsibility? Everybody knows that Amazon has algorithms up the consumer. I mean, they have algorithms for this, algorithms for that, which, by the way, I am telling everybody, I want to remind all authors that you have to have at least 50 reviews on Amazon for your books. If you don't have 50 reviews, really, according to everybody I've talked to involved with Amazon, your books go to the bottom. They just do not move on Amazon if you have less than 50 reviews. But what is one of the authors at BoucherCon wanted to know, if Amazon, this happens, somebody scans a book and changes the names, but the basic layout, the basic paragraph structure, the words are the same. Doesn't Amazon have an algorithm that catches this kind of thing?
It does.
It does.
It does.
And so they're responsible for...
They're not responsible, all right? So Amazon is the equivalent of somebody opening up a great big store, and there's a whole bunch of stuff being sold in there, okay, which we're not actually selling. We're just allowing it to pass through, right? We're just, like, let's say, a wholesaler. And so they have what they call a safe harbor against infringement, because otherwise all of these plaintiffs would sue Amazon because the infringing books are presented there, all right? So we made laws so that Amazon couldn't be held responsible for those types of things. But Amazon came along and eBay and the others and created their own internal intellectual property dispute resolution protocols, all right? And if you go to Amazon, you can go and find those, and you can register your works, your trademarks and such, your intellectual property. And then once they're in the registry of Amazon and all of their little algorithms are running, and you think you have an infringement, then you can have those removed from Amazon by using their dispute resolution protocols.
Okay, so there is that protection.
There is that protection. You have to work through it, okay? It takes a little bit of time. It can be kind of cumbersome and confusing. But all of the big sellers now, all the big internet sellers, have these protocols. And then once you register your intellectual property, then they will see the infringing work and it will come down. And this is a lot of work that we do for our clients because the infringements are constantly popping up on all these different internet sites. And so we have this, you know, little process that we call whack-a-mole. And every time they pop up, then you have to notify Amazon or eBay or whoever it is that where it's being sold, move through their resolution policies, and then that'll come down. That site will come down, that particular seller. But then it'll pop up again somewhere else because they'll just create another IP address somewhere else and come up under another name. And so you're constantly having to enforce your intellectual property by looking for infringements. And then when you find them, then Amazon will or the others will help you knock these infringers off the site. That's the best you can do.
Okay. Now, one of the, you know, I've had over the months, people have asked me about you. Just they want to know a little bit more about you. They hear your voice and they want to hear more about you and why you like intellectual property. And do you have any favorite, this is a question I've had on another, do you have any favorite movies, law movies?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
So I was born in Philadelphia and I went to a small Quaker school, Friends Central in Philadelphia, part of the Society of Friends or Quakers. And came up with a family that was very pro-education. We were not allowed to watch TV. We were not allowed to go out at nights. It was sports, education, studying, back to it, which worked out well. Because, you know, if you don't force kids to study, they won't. And so then I went on to a private college and then ended up at USF and then law school in San Francisco. And I think I eventually wanted to be a lawyer because my dad was a lawyer. My dad was a patent lawyer with DuPont, and he got an early retirement back in 1985, the golden parachute, so to speak. And we had always been coming here to Clearwater because this is where the Phillies have their spring training. So I've been coming to Clearwater my whole life. So my parents moved down here, and my dad was retired from DuPont, and he said, let's start a law firm. I said, okay, sounds great. I came down and took the test for went to law school, and then my father and I worked together all those years. He passed away about 10 years ago, and so that's kind of my history. And then I have my wife, Mickey, and I have one daughter, Haley, and we are continue to be very pro-education, forcing our daughter to go through college and study. It's not easy. It's a constant fight, but that's kind of my story. In terms of legal movies, I think the best legal movie that was ever made is My Cousin Vinny. I don't know if you've heard.
Oh, yes.
All right. It's actually used in law school to teach trial techniques. It's that good.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So if you want to, yeah, really get, really, really see a great movie with legal issues in it, My Cousin Vinny is the best.
Okay.
In terms of the other legal movies, yes, they are very Hollywood, okay? You can't prounce around the courtroom and yell and scream. You're limited to staying at the podium. It's very low and boring and slow. It's not yelling at judges and flapping papers around. The judges will never let you get away with that. Most of the people that come and watch trials fall asleep. They're really slow. There's a lot of argument about evidence, lot of argument, you know, side bench with the judge. And even the jurors will tell you that it's a very slow, meticulous, boring process because it's so procedurally oriented. So yes, the Hollywood movies are fun and cool, but they are as far away from reality as it could be.
Well, I think My Cousin Vinny is a great choice. I love that movie. I watch it every time it comes back on television. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. As I said, it's always fun to have you here in the studio. And everyone out there, really think about protecting your intellectual property rights. Bill is always available at Larson & Larson Patent Law.
Correct. .com,
and you can go there and just let Bill know, and he's always happy to have you come in and sit down and talk about what he can do for you.
How we can protect your
and be
rights.
Protected, because as I said, if Clive Cussler can get in trouble, you guys can get in trouble. And
it happened to anybody.
And it happened to me. So I know, and that is why once a month I want Bill Larson in here to help you, because when I was young and naive and I didn't know anything, I did things and signed things. Don't sign anything without a lawyer. That's all I'm going to tell you. Do not sign anything without a lawyer. Is that a good advice, Bill?
That's great advice.
Great advice. Okay, thanks so much for being in today.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break, and then I'll be right back.
Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am so happy to be back with two absolutely wonderful guests. I am very excited. I always love to have military guys on, and these two are real heroes. Jocko Willink and Leif Babin have written an absolutely amazing book. It's called The Dichotomy of Leadership, Balancing the Challenges of Extreme Ownership to Lead and Win. Hi, guys.
Patsy, thanks for having us on.
Oh, wow. I'm always thrilled. You know, I lived overseas in a number of different countries. And for me, Navy SEALs are my go-to people. And I'm always so happy to have just to be around you guys.
Well, we appreciate being around you as well.
And you're so cute. I had to put your pictures up on my Facebook page because I saw both of you. I thought, oh, they are so cute. But Navy SEALs are always so cute.
I hate to disagree with you, but have you ever seen a picture of Jocko? Because cute is not the
Oh, he is. He's adorable. He's darling. I love all Navy SEALs. You just get me giddy. So we better get to business here because we need leadership. And boy, oh boy, this book is really great. And, you know, the thing is, in this day and age, everybody wants to understand more about leadership. So tell us about this book.
So the first book that we wrote together was a book called Extreme Ownership. And that was about leaders taking ownership of everything in their world, not blaming anyone else, not making any excuses, but taking ownership of problems and then getting those problems solved.
And it became a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, it did. And in the end of that book, we introduced a concept that we call the dichotomy of leadership. And what that is opposing forces, multiple opposing forces that are pulling leaders in opposite directions. And what we realized is that these opposing forces can really throw a leader off balance. So, for instance, we know that a leader has to be aggressive. In order to make things happen, they've got to be aggressive. But a leader can be too aggressive. And if you're too aggressive as a leader, you can put your team or your mission at risk. Now, if you go too far in the other direction, where you're not aggressive enough and you become passive, well, now you don't make things happen. And you are at the whim of the situation that's going on around you. So where you want to be is somewhere in the middle. That's where you want to be. You want to be well-balanced. And there's a bunch of examples. I mean, another simple example would be, we know that a leader has to talk, right? A leader has to communicate. But if a leader talks too much, then the team stops listening because they're just basically running their mouth all the time. Whereas if a leader doesn't talk enough, then the team doesn't know what they're supposed to do. They don't understand the mission. And so where a leader wants to be there is somewhere in the middle. They want to be balanced. And so what we found is, after we wrote the first book and that came out, is that balancing these dichotomies is very, very difficult for leaders. And when they don't do it correctly, it derails them as leaders, and that can derail the whole team. And so we wrote this book to teach leaders how to balance all these dichotomies of leadership.
Well, you know, I think what you guys are talking about is really being a good mom. You know, that's what being a good mom is. We have to learn this balance. And so I think it's absolutely terrific, your ideas. Tell us how people can use your ideas in their everyday life.
Well, they absolutely do apply to being a mom, being a dad, being a parent, raising kids, being a spouse. They apply anywhere. And one of the things that we talk about is a leader's got to be aggressive, but not too aggressive. You got to be able to solve problems. And I like to, when my wife actually tells me to, she's talking about a problem, I want to solve that problem. I want to get in there. I want to make things happen. I want to get the problem solved. And then all of a sudden I realize that, by trying to do that, I've gone too far in the direction of being aggressive to solve problems. And I need to actually take a step back and listen more and understand where she's coming from and just hear out what she's trying to tell me. So if you could take any of these things, in different directions. For me, raising with my kids, Jocko wrote a chapter called Disciplined But Not Rigid, and you got to be disciplined. You want to make sure that your kids have discipline and they understand that there's parameters of behavior that are not tolerable, and yet you don't want to be rigid in that. You got to let your kids have some room to run and make some mistakes of their own and learn from those mistakes rather than keep them within those tight parameters.
Now, for you, you became a Navy SEAL. What you've done is so amazing and beyond what most humans can accomplish. And when did you realize that you were going to be a great leader?
Well, this is Jocko talking, and I realized at a young age that I wanted to be some kind of commando. I knew I wanted to go in the military. And when I realized that there was commandos that actually worked a lot in the water and I really liked the water, and that was the SEAL teams, then I kind of realized that was the place that I should try and go. Now, as far as when I knew I was become a great leader, well, I still don't think I'm a great leader today. And I think that's one thing that a good leader does do is never thinks to themselves, oh, I'm a great leader and everyone should just listen to me. You got to be more humble than that. That's one of the things you have to do as leaders. You got to keep your ego in check. And we wrote about that in the first book. Now, that being said, even though as a leader we have to stay humble and we have to keep our ego in check, at the same time, we can't be too humble. We can't get to a point where we lack confidence, because if you lack confidence as a leader, then people aren't going to follow you. So once again, this is another dichotomy that you have to balance. You have to make sure that you're confident, but you have to, at the same time, make sure that you're not overconfident. That's another dichotomy that all leaders have to learn to balance.
Well, I want to tell my listeners so that they know that you have, you know, when I talk about heroes, you have a silver star and a bronze star, and I hope not too many purple hearts, because I what you guys do is so amazing, and I'm always so honored to be able to talk to American heroes who have done so much for us, and that you, of course, with you have really taken on the role of teaching this leadership to the SEALs at many levels.
Well, Patsy, I got to tell you, we're not heroes. We serve with some heroes, certainly, and the heroes were the guys who gave their lives and didn't come home. Those are the heroes, guys like Mark Lee and Mike Monsoor and Ryan Job and others that were seriously wounded. And those were just our guys from Tatskin and Bruiser. I mean, there was so many from all the Army and Marine Corps units that we served with, and so many from other services, certainly throughout the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So those are the real heroes. We're not heroes, but we got to serve with some of those heroes. And I can tell you that was incredibly rewarding, though, to come back. We always say one of the best things that we brought home with us was the lessons that we learned. So after the Battle of Ramadi in 2006 and intense urban combat situations where we were humbled constantly through day in and day out, urban combat situations where bad things happened and we didn't properly plan or the enemy maneuvered in a way that we hadn't foreseen, and we had to learn a lot of those tough lessons. And we came back. Jocko took over the training for all the West Coast SEAL teams. I took over the training for the junior officers that were just coming out of the basic SEAL training pipeline, and we passed those lessons on to the next generation of SEALs. And that was an incredibly rewarding experience. And really, what we found was that those leadership lessons that we learned apply to anyone in any situation throughout the civilian sector, in businesses, in life. And we saw a real need for that a few years ago, and that's why we launched our company, Echelon Front. And that's why we wrote our first book, Extreme Ownership, and this follow-on book, The Dichotomy of Leadership.
Well, we certainly need more, I don't know, today, in this day and age where we have so many problems, and knowing that there are people like you out there who have really analyzed the situation and are working to help build leaders. This is, who understand, who have exactly the sensitivity that a leader needs, but also has the strength to just keep going when things are tough.
Certainly perseverance is a great quality that all leaders have to have. And, we talk about the troubles that we face right now as a nation, but I always like to remind people that this nation has been through much worse troubles. World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War. I mean, let's face the fact, at one point in our history, we fought each other in the Civil War. We were able to overcome that, and the strength of this country will carry on.
Now, of course, having your recent experience in Iraq, you must have some insights into what's happening there.
Well, what happened in Iraq was, after we got done with our fighting there, Iraq remained a pretty stable place for about 7 years. And then, as we all know, ISIS formulated from the embers of the insurgency that we had fought against. And once we left the country, unfortunately, those embers took hold and created a giant fire that we ended up recognizing as ISIS. And that was very problematic. They took land. And fortunately, America came back and went in and assisted the Iraqi troops themselves as they took back those areas where ISIS had taken over, and where, you know, there's about 40,000 ISIS fighters about 2 years ago, and right now they're estimating that there's less than 1,000. The rest of them, those other 39,000, have been eliminated, and that's a great victory for America, but more important, that's a great victory for Iraq, and it's a great victory for the world to have that type of evil, subhuman people eliminated so they don't spread their hatred around the world.
Well, it certainly is for all of us. We have to be so grateful to both of you for what you've done. And I know that now you're having an opportunity with this Echelon Front that you've founded to go out there and to talk not just to military people, military leaders, but to business people, to get them to understand that leadership is also part of being responsible for their companies and what happens with the products that they develop.
There's no question. Leadership is the it's the most important thing on the battlefield. That's what we learned, and it's the most important thing in any business, in any team. And when we say leadership, we're not talking about just the senior person in charge. We're talking about leaders at every level of the team. So that's the mid-level managers all the way down to the frontline troopers who aren't in charge of anybody else but just themselves and their little piece of the mission. Leaders at every level stepping up, that's what builds a great team. And when leaders understand how to balance, when those leaders at every level of the team understand how to balance between these two opposing forces, to be a leader and a follower, to be focused but detached, to plan but not overplan, to be humble but not passive, when they can find that balance, then that's when you can really build the extraordinary team. Those nuances that they can understand and they're aware that they have to balance these dichotomies. That's when you can really have the most effective teams that are out there dominating all competition. And that's why we wrote this book, The Dichotomy of Leadership.
Well, I think it's a fantastic book. And Jocko has also identified an area of that's very interesting, I thought, of children's books.
Yes, I have. I've written two children books at this point. The first one is called Way of the Warrior Kid, and the next one is called Mark's Mission. And The Way of the Warrior Kid is about a young kid named Mark who faces some of the problems that a lot of kids face. He doesn't know his times tables. He doesn't know how to swim. He can't do any pull-ups. And he's getting bullied at school. And when he finishes his fifth grade year, he comes home. He's really sad about how harsh the school year was on him. But luckily, his uncle stays with him for the summer, and his uncle is named Uncle Jake. And Uncle Jake was a Navy SEAL. And he helps Mark figure out how to overcome and conquer all those problems that he has. And I continue the story on in the next book, which is called Mark's Mission.
Well, I think it's a great idea because we need a generation of children who are strong. And I like the idea. And it's not just for boys, because there are warrior girls who, you know, we want to be strong. We want our children to be strong and to take control of their lives.
Yes, Patsy, that's 100% correct. I have three daughters and one son, and all my kids are warrior kids.
And that's exactly why I think it's so nice that you have sort of moved into also this section where you're writing for children, because while, you know, we don't need, I don't know, what are they calling the kids nowadays, snowflakes or marshmallows or whatever, we need kids who are able to look at things and be strong and to stand for what's right and to look up to people who have served our country. And all of that, I think, is really, really so important.
I totally agree, Patsy, and I definitely saw a void of that type of literature for young kids to read, and that's definitely one of the things that motivated me to write these books for kids out there so they could learn these lessons that you just talked about.
Well, I know I'm going to put that on my website because, you know, when I first got it, the Dichotomy of Leadership book, I'd already read the first book, but then when I discovered that you had written these special books for children, I thought, wow, this is something that's necessary because we need, as you've You know, the wars don't stop, unfortunately. The problems in the world don't stop. And we need a next generation of leaders who have the same dedication that you guys have.
I totally agree with you. And like I said, that's part of our American tradition. We raise warrior kids, and I try to carry on that tradition through these books.
Well, you both are really such amazing heroes. And as I said, for anyone who travels overseas and anyone who goes to different countries, you always know in the back of your mind that somewhere there are Navy SEALs not too many hours away. And it is a comforting thought, I can tell you that, because as I said, having lived in some places where one never knows if there are problems, and I remember, I will also add that Marines, because I remember one time I had to run to an American embassy, and the most beautiful sight I ever saw in my life was an American Marine standing guard. But to know that you guys are out there and that you are always ready, and you guys have gone back so many times to Iraq and faced this danger, you guys are really just remarkable.
Well, thank you very much, Patsy. Again, it's not that we're remarkable. We serve with some very remarkable people. You know, Jocko and I have both, he retired. I left active duty. You know, so we've turned over the watch. But there's a lot of fine young American men and women still serving in uniform. And it's a good thing for the rest of the world. It's a good thing for freedom everywhere.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much, both of you, for being on the program, Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. And the book is called The Dichotomy of Leadership, Balancing the Challenges of Extreme Ownership to Lead and Win. And you have a website that people can visit?
We do. It's echelonfront.com is our company. You can buy The Dichotomy of Leadership anywhere books are sold.
And I'm sure that you are available for giving speeches to corporations and organizations where building leadership is so important.
Yeah, that's what our website, Echelon Front, will lead you to, is our services as a leadership consultant company.
Okay. Well, again, thank you both for being on today, and thank you for your service, and God bless you, and God bless all of the Navy SEALs out there. God bless them, and I think they're all adorable. Okay?
Thank you very much, Patsy.
Okay.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Oh, wow. They are cute. They're cute. I put them, I looked at their pictures on Facebook, on you know, that I was sent, and I said, I have to put their pictures on Facebook. Navy SEALs are adorable, and it's just so nice always to know that they are out there, and it's so good that, when you think of what's happening in the world and what the Navy SEALs have accomplished, and we owe them all so, so very much for protecting us and for being out there and always ready. You know, it is true. Having lived in, as I said, in places that you might get in trouble, you want to know that the Navy SEALs are not too far away at any given time. They will come out there to protect you. So I want to, again, mention that I'm going to put not just this book up on my webpage, but I will also put the children's books, because I think it is so wonderful that that they are working so hard to promote leadership among children, and I really like that. And so those books are by Jocko Willink, and the first one is called Way of the Warrior Kid, and I'm sure that if you have a kid in your life, it's a good book to get, and a wonderful book to start them on this idea, because I get so many books here about bullying. I think in the past 3 months during the summer, I received perhaps 24 books that covered the subject of bullying, and it is such a serious problem, and we really need to teach our children how to act properly, and both from the point of view if they're being bullied and if they are bullies, that there's a better way to act and to be. And so I think you will enjoy this book by Jocko Willink. And I also want to thank everybody who helped me with BoucherCon. It was wonderful. As I said, the event was great. I got to meet many of the authors who were on the program. And I will be putting up their pictures on Facebook and on my website. I can't even say which ones I love the most, but so many. On next in 2 weeks, I will have Kathy Ace. She is one of the authors that I met at BoucherCon. She's from Vancouver, and she writes cozy mysteries, and she's really lots of fun. And she was just one of the many people, authors who were at BoucherCon. So if you, you know, it's so much fun if you are a reader to attend these events, because all the readers had so much fun. And if you are an author, it's a wonderful opportunity to expand your audience. And if you are just in the process of writing and you need to be inspired, just to hear the panels of the authors talking about their books and how they started off and how they accomplished what they did, they all have interesting stories, and you can find them at these kind of events. And there are whatever type of books you're interested, sci-fi, mystery, romance, they have wonderful events where you can go and get inspired, because that's what you need. You need to be inspired so that you will write a book, and then hopefully you will also get inspired to use Larson & Larson as your intellectual property lawyers. I tell you, they have been terrific for me. They are also my patent lawyers. If you have an idea for a patent, just contact them. Larson & Larson are absolutely terrific, and they just do a terrific job. They got me 4 patents, and they're working on 3 more, so I want to highly recommend them. And I also, one other thing I wanted to do is say, oh yeah, do my Facebook page again. Everybody's back on Facebook, and it's not going away. So go to Radio Joy on Paper. That's my Facebook page. And then I'm going to put this interview and several other interviews up this weekend on my webpage, which is radio-joyonpaper. And you can hear the interviews there and see the books, some of the authors that I met at BoucherCon, and some of the photos. So it's going to be very nice. And meanwhile, remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. So it's up to you. All you have to do is start writing a page a day, and in a year you'll have a book. And you never know, someday you might hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, because somebody will be filming your book. So it's up to you. Just start today. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me. And he's saluting me. I'm saluting him. I should have been a drill instructor, because I like getting saluted. Okay, bye-bye now.